And I stopped by a friend. Friend's place. This was old man Pierman. He was an old Texas banker. I used to ride horseback with him a lot, and we used to hunt a lot with the hounds. We had a pack of hounds up in Oxnard. And we'd chase coyotes with them out here. It's just like the old southern fox hunt deal, but there was coyotes. Then I went back by his house, and his wife said he was gone. Said he had gone down into Orange County someplace. They were having a 3-day hunt. And the only thing she could remember about it was there was something about Linda, old Linda, Linda something. And she thought it was in the Carbon Canyon area. And to make a long story short, I left home about 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock that night. Gouged the gills. And came straight to these hunters. They were up on the other side of this valley. And I came right straight to them. I didn't know where Carbon Canyon was, or I didn't know anything about old Linda or Yorba Linda or anything else. But I never missed a foot. I came right to the camp. Spent 3 days in Carbon Canyon. And got home and still didn't know where it was. And I never saw anything. We were standing here looking at this wonderful view. Beautiful country. I never saw it. This morning I can see it. It's quite a thing. I was up recently to Grass Valley. And one of the drunks up there kicked me out, showing me the country. Over to Nevada City and around. And that's real beautiful country up in there. And we were passing a lot of churches. Now, again, I have nothing against churches. Don't get me wrong. But here we were out in this wonderful country and the beautiful, beautiful, beautiful scenery. And here we're going by these churches, see? And I finally said to Harry, I said, Harry, isn't it funny that we think that we have to get into a building someplace with walls and a roof in order to worship God. And look at this cathedral we got all around us here. He made this one. Why do we think we got to get into some cramped quarters with a roof over us to worship God? And so we've got a pretty good spot here for our endeavors, I think. There are several amongst us who are not long in this way of life, from a few months to a few years. And I would like to clarify again my own position a little bit. What we are saying together here is the essence of what comes out of practicing these principles in all of our affairs. This thing will not happen to any of us unless we do these things. We have a formula. We have a formula of life. There are conditions to be fulfilled. There are a couple of conditions even before we take the 12 steps. One of them's back in Chapter 3. We heard it a while ago. Breakfast. It says, we learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. We learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. That's a condition. There's another condition. It says if you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. This is another condition before the steps. You see? If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, that puts it number one on the hit parade. And then it says, here are the steps we took. Here are the things we did, which are suggested as program of recovery. Now, lest we get lost in theory, and lest we get lost in way out, we're sort of way out this morning, and think that this is the thing and this isn't, you know, and fool ourselves. Let us be quick to realize that the things that we're talking about will happen to any individual who fulfills these conditions, and they will not happen unless we do fulfill the conditions. They won't happen. That's what we ended with here a while ago. It's up to us to do the thing that make this conscious awareness of the unity of life possible. We've got a lot of things to do. And let's don't forget it. We've got our program all lined out for us, and we get lost doing these things. We can't even con God in doing these things for us. They're things that we must do. And these things that we're talking about now are the things that happen to us as we do these things and when we do them, and not before. I said a while ago, intellectual knowledge this is not the thing. It's the conversion of intellectual knowledge through action into wisdom that makes the difference. It's got to be converted from intellectual knowledge through action into wisdom. And action is the only thing that will convert it. In the language of the ancients, they said, act as though I am, and I will be, saith the Lord. Act, action. We act like our father's kids, and we prove to ourselves that we are. And then nobody can take this away from us. The action proves the thing. Attitude and action. Attitude and action. Motivation and action. This is the deal. Motivation and action. Now, I suspect that many amongst us are in business in one way or another. I don't know whether we got any retired people amongst us or not. There's only a few that are old enough to retire. And I happen to be one of them.
You don't have to be so to retire. I retired 5 years ago.
It's quite a name. And you used to be here talking. I'm still working.
I just got tired. No R-E on it.
Can, huh? So this little session is going to be on business, on attitude and effort in business, because this is an area that many of our people bog down in. How often do we hear our folks say, well, I don't seem to have any interest in material things anymore. The spirit. Spiritual things. Now, I will have to say to you again, right at the outset, that I do not believe there are two things. I do not believe that there's a spiritual world and a material world. I do not think that there's one experience that is non-spiritual and another experience that is spiritual. It's all one thing. The visible universe to me is the evidence of or the body of God. Just as your body is the evidence of you, but is not you, so is the visible universe, the body of God, the evidence. You know, we said at breakfast, that which is made is not made of that which doth appear. The idea and the fulfillment of the idea, or the fruition of the idea. So the manifest universe to me is the body of God, just as my body is the evidence of me, so is the creation the evidence of the Father. And there's not two things. Even in science, taking Einstein, the author of this statement, he says, energy and mass are equal, identical, and interchangeable. Energy and mass are equal, identical, and interchangeable. It's all the same thing in different forms. Now this body of ours, we think, we look at each other and we think we're seeing each other. But we're only seeing the evidence. Because when the engineer leaves the engine don't work. When we leave this body, the body no longer has any value at all. I think it's worth about, used to be worth 98 cents, the chemicals in the body. With inflation, it might be up to about 276. So the body don't amount to much. After the engineer's gone, after we leave it. And so I don't think in terms of two things, material and spiritual. I think in terms of one thing that includes all things. And so I find myself in the position of thinking that business and AA and church and family and play and a retreat, they're all the same thing. Not indifferent. They're exactly the same thing. And should be included in the same package. Now, when the first step says, we admitted that we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable, it does not define our lives have become unmanageable as saying that we're unmanageable over liquor. Don't just say that our lives are unmanageable as far as liquor is concerned. It says that our lives are unmanageable by us. Now, so often we in Alcoholics Anonymous will say, okay, now I'll take this area of my life and I'll turn it over to God. I can't drink and live. And I can't keep from drinking. So I'm going to give this to the old man, this area of it here. But these areas I've got to keep. You know? Boy, Murphy, I'll take care of her. See that? If we don't put that in the pot. Sure. And out here in this field of business, I've still got to go out here and outthink them, outperform them, and outmaneuver them in order to get something to eat and a buck to put in the basket. And so we keep this area out. That's why I said a moment ago that this package includes everything that you and I include in it, and excludes everything that you and I include out. You see? What we exclude is excluded. And if we do not then practice these principles in all of our affairs, but think that the business world is something different, it is something different. I find no division in life. Now, I'll tell you a little story. I said a while ago, I lived for 43 years to get, according to rules, as I understood them. Because I was conditioned by school, church, home, family, and society to believe that you had to get. This was life. You earn by the sweat of your brow. You know? The very emphasis on preparation, school preparation, is so that you can be able to outdo your neighbor. Our very cliches are based on it. The early bird gets the worm. I heard some monkey talking about that this morning at 6 o'clock. We're not even supposed to get up till 6:30, and at 6, the early bird gets the worm. Who wants a worm at 6 o'clock? His old rooster, probably. He had it for that time. You got to be there firstest with the mostest. The devil takes the hindermost. So we got to get out there and compete like hell. Outthink, outmaneuver, and outperform. In order to eke out a miserable living out of an unfriendly universe. And we're conditioned to believe these things. And yet our program does not say our lives have become unmanageable in the liquor department, or in the women department, the family department. But our lives have become manageable, which includes the whole package. And we better include it in. Now, just as another little aside, I was yakking over by San Gabriel, I expect, a while back. And after the meeting, there were about four or five of us standing in the middle of the room talking. And I said to one of these guys, I'd seen him around a few times, I said, "What are you doing?" "Well," he says, "Chuck, I'm not doing anything right now." He says, "You know something? I can't quite decide what God wants me to do." And I says, "You can't?" Oh, big shot, huh?
Governor.
He says, "I can't quite decide what God wants me to do." And I says, "You can't?" I says, "You're in a fair way of starving to death, son." And I used a word which I can't use on this tape, so I'll change it a little. I says, "I don't believe that God gives a damn." I didn't say that. I said, "Worse one than that. What you're doing, it's how you're doing it. It's your attitude. I don't think God cares whether I'm washing dishes or whether I'm president of the United States. It's my motivation that makes the difference." Now, 17 years ago, I started doing things in business with the same motive that I make a 12-step call. I just started trying to help somebody do something that they needed to have done because I wanted to. A complete reversal of the way I had done things all my life. Twenty years ago, I wouldn't have drawn a plan for Jesus Christ. You know? I was a big man, a sales manager, if you don't mind. And I had me a punk there that I was paying $3.75 an hour. And I told him what to draw, and he made the lines. I wouldn't have drawn a plan for anybody. I was just plumb too big. Well, 17 years ago, I started drawing plans. Just because I wanted to. And I've drawn every plan that's gone out of my place for 17 years with my own hands. I'm liable to be down there drawing at midnight. And I get a great kick out of it. It's a fine pastime. So, I started doing things for people that they needed to have done because I wanted to. And the joint filled up. For those of you who don't know, we are in the manufacturing business. We manufacture food market fixtures, just market. And that's all. And they kept us busy, and we prospered. And 6 years and a little better ago, no damage.
No.
All was well. Okay. My boss was going to retire. And another firm and myself bought the business. I thought it was a very wonderful marriage because these people were in the refrigeration business and tied right in with mine. And I had called on the president of the other firm 4 years before when he was dying, and he had been sober for 4 years. And I thought we were walking down the same road. And I thought, this is the greatest marriage in business. This is it. So we bought this business 50-50. And we hadn't been together 60 days when I knew that we were not walking down the same road. We were not motivated by the same motive. We didn't do business with the same thing in mind, helping people do things that they needed to have done. And so I was afraid I'd made a bad deal. We had many sessions, trying to resolve our differences. And we couldn't resolve them. And after some 6 months, I knew that I either had to buy or sell. I couldn't live with the situation. And it was a big thing, and where was the money coming from? And it seemed like it was impossible. And so I quit bringing in business, because my people depend on me to execute. And I didn't know if I was going to be there to execute. And I couldn't put them in that position, and I just quit bringing in business. And to make a long story short, through a series of miracles, I was able to buy him out. And I did. But I bought a vacant plant. And it costs a minimum of $15,000 a week to keep the doors open. And so I had to have some business. Now I had to have business. And I took the bit in my teeth and I went to get it. I had to have it. Hell, I got a overhead of $15,000 a week and no business. Well, I had 5 or 6 deals that were promised to me. And I went to get them. And one after another, they evaporated. But I had one that couldn't get away. One was mine. The two partners who owned the business were both members of AA. And 28 of their highest echelon were AA members. And nearly every time I went to the Long Beach area, here were 30 of these guys sitting right in front of me, you know. I'd done the planning for them. I'd done all the thinking for them. I had the deal all set to go. And it couldn't get away, you know. So I went down to get it. And a half a dozen of us went to lunch. Had a hell of a good time down at Welsh's there on Atlantic in Long Beach. We came back to the place. And everybody disappeared like a bunch of rats off a sinking ship. But Harold Hodges and myself, and we went into his office, and I reached for the money. And he says, Chuck, he says, I didn't think you could ever straighten out that goddamn mess you were in. And I gave this deal to him. And that was the last one. About 5 minutes later, he says to me, Chuck, why don't you say something? And I said, Harold, I haven't got anything to say. And I got up and started back to town. And if I wasn't in a mess, I'll put up with nothing in prospect. This was the last one, and it was gone. And I just pulled off the road. And I sat there and I said to myself, what the hell's the matter? What are you trying to do? Twelve years ago, you started trying to help people do things that they needed to have done. And the joint's been full. And you're all of a sudden, you've got to get that bit in your teeth and go throwing your weight around and getting something. What's the matter with you? Why don't you do this thing like you did it for 12 years? And let the chips fall where they may. And I just gave the business back to the old man where it belongs. And I started making 12-step calls again. And the joint filled up and it's been full ever since. Now, what am I trying to say? I am trying to say just this. That whatever this great thing is, it also includes substance. Substance. But you and I have to include substance also. This is the whole package. This is a living package that we're talking about. And it includes our business, just as it includes our drinking and our home and everything else. Now, the attitude. I don't sell fixtures. But we don't build anything that isn't sold. We are custom builders. We haven't a stock item in the case. And everything has to be sold before it's made. And we're in a very highly competitive business. It's as highly competitive as any business in town. And yet, 99% of my business is done without competitive bid. Now, business people look at me and say, you're a goddamn liar. Business is not done this way. But I have 17 years to prove that it is. And the only time I've ever been in trouble is when I've gotten in there to run that thing, to make things happen. It's the only time I've ever gotten into trouble. So I know that it's the attitude and the effort. It's my business to help people do things that they need to have done, and it's God's business to take care of them. Now, let's look at it a little bit further. When the Panorama Market was built out in Panorama City, it was the biggest single-floor operation in the country at that time. And it was being built by a Jewish chap by the name of Morris Weistein for a couple of his sons-in-law. He had retired. And their office at that time was in a market called the Palace Market on Sepulveda, just south of Manchester. And their office was off of a balcony. And I went out there to see Morris, and there were quite a number of salesmen from other companies, from the cash register people and scale people and other things, waiting to get in and see this guy. Came my turn and I went in. And he was sitting looking like an accident going someplace to happen. And he looked up at me and he started telling me what I was going to have to do to get his business. And when he got through, I said to him this. I said, Morris, I think he got me wrong. You talk like I'd come out here to sell you something. I didn't. I've got nothing to sell. I came out here to help you with this problem, if I can. And if I can't, you're busy and so am I. And he leaned back in his chair and lit a cigarette and he says, I know it, Johnny. and I put his market in for it. When it opened, there were many of us out there to wish him well, you know, and quite a few of these guys that were on the balcony were there. And it's the first time I'd seen them, and they were telling me what a tremendous piece of reverse selling they'd done. Finest piece of sales psychology they had ever seen. Walk in and tell a man that you got nothing to sell and come out with a $75,000 order. Terrific. Oh, they were really laying it on. And I says, you boys, you got me wrong. You got the whole picture wrong. What makes you think that a man that can afford to build a building that's costing $500,000 and equipping it at $250,000 and then putting stock in it, what makes you think he's going to listen to sales psychology? If he had been listening to sales psychology, he wouldn't have the dough to put this thing up. You know. But he's got it. So sales psychology had nothing to do with it. I told him the simple truth. I had nothing to sell. I was there to help him work that thing out if I could. And if I couldn't, he was busy and so was I. And the simple, unadulterated truth is the most powerful thing under heaven, more powerful than the hydrogen bomb. And he knew that I told him the truth, and he relaxed. Now, what is my position in this thing? I lay out all the stores that my people put in, the people I'm serving. I draw the plans for them. I lock the space. I put the fixtures in place. And I plumb the store and put in the electrical outlets that it takes to operate my equipment. And I give it to them, and they take it to an architect, and he builds a building around it. Now, it's my business to know the operation. I have to know the operation, or I can't do that. I have to know exactly what these guys do and how they do it. Because you're not allowed to make many mistakes when you're putting in any place from $250,000 to $1 million in a building. If I'm making mistakes there, I don't do it the next time. So it's my business to know what I'm doing, and there's nothing to take the place of it. This is my business. I've got to know what I'm doing. And I do know what I'm doing. I go all over the country, in Canada, looking at what they're doing in other parts of the country. I study the operations of my people, so I know what the hell they're doing. And then I can put it on paper, and it works for them. Now, this is my business, and let's don't kid ourselves. God isn't going to do that for me. If I'm going to put myself in position of helping people do things that they need to have done in my business, I better jolly well equip myself to do it. Because God is not going to do this for me at all. But then it's attitude and effort from then on. Not outthinking, outperforming, and outmaneuvering, but making a 12-step call, helping people do things that they need to have done, and letting the chips fall where they may. I'll give you one more little instance. I have a client in Phoenix. He's a Syrian. And the Syrians taught the Jews and the Armenians what they know about business. They're just about the shrewdest people that you get mixed up with. I've just put in the 10th market for the guy, and I'm building the 11th one now. And I never even guess what they're going to cost him. He never even asked me. He never even asked. And when the store is in and they open it, I fly over to Phoenix and I have his bill in my pocket. And we look the store over and have a little fun and go to lunch. And he says, "Charlie, did you bring me my bill?" And I said, "Yeah." And he says, "Where is it?" And I pull it out of my pocket. He turns over to the last page and looks at it, picks up the phone, calls his office and says, "Send a check over here for $76,962. And he signs it and gives it to me. And that's it. Now what am I telling you? Am I telling you how good I am? No. No. I am telling you what a thing this is. What a thing this is. It's my business to know what I'm doing. It's my business to do it because I want to. To help people do things that they need to have done. This is my business. And it's God's business to take care of me. Now this is a brand new concept of business. It's totally reversed from the way I did it for 43 years. Or for that portion of the 43 years that I was in it. From the time I was 13 till I was 43, that would be 30 years, wouldn't it? So, the attitude and effort is the thing. Now, in business, there are words that have had great meaning. Responsibility, duty, obligation. These words went out of my vocabulary 17 years ago. The words are gone. They've always been gone. With the few little exceptions of when I've grabbed the wheel and start to run with it again. Obligation, responsibility, duty. What has taken their place again? Love. Love. I do these things just because I want to, just for free and for fun. This is my business. Just because I want to. And let the chips fall where they may. I spent 3 days with Bill Wilson one time, about 8-9 years ago. When I finished my second year as delegate from this area, Bill came to me after the conference was over and he says, "Chuck," he says, "you haven't taken 5 minutes of my time in 2 years." And he says, "I think I know why. But," he says, "it's time for us to get acquainted. And if you don't mind, I'm coming out to see you." And I says, "This couldn't happen to me, but I'm ready. Come along." So when he got ready, he came out, and he spent 3 days with me in my living room, and we never opened the front door. And we did a lot of talking. And I made this remark to Bill, and he never could get it through his head. And he still writes me every once in a while and pokes a little fun at me. Because he would say to me, "But Chuck, you're responsible." And I'd say to him, "Yes, I hope so, Bill. I hope I'm a rock, but I have no feeling of responsibility. No feeling of duty. No feeling of obligation. Because it's been replaced by an entirely different motive. The motive is all different. I do it because I want to, because I love it. And this is what we're talking about. Now, let's relate this to the thing we were talking about the first thing. It appears that there's a great law in this life, insofar as I am personally concerned. I do not even believe in a God of judgment at all. It's contrary, I know, to most orthodoxy, but I do not believe in a God of judgment. I believe in a law of justice without judgment. Justice without judgment. A law that says whatever I pour into the stream of life comes back, heaped up, pressed down, and running over. A law that is immutable. God can't change it, and you and I can't change it. Whatever I pour into the stream of life comes back, heaped up, pressed down, and running over. This is the law. And nobody makes it work. It works while we sleep. Works all the time. Justice without judgment. Now, all in the world, the law means is that you can't plant radishes and get cucumbers. That's all in the world it means. I studied the law for 20 years. I've read books enough on the law to... And I tried to live by the law for many years. But all in the world anybody ever needs to know about the law is that it is. And that whatever I plant, I reap. Now, I can go right down the road with this. I can go right smack dab down the road with this justice without judgment. If I don't like what I am getting out of life, I don't say, well, conditions are bad all over. The boss is no good. I couldn't hardly say that because I'm the boss. Or there's a conspiracy against me. If I don't like what's coming into my life, I have to stop and come to myself and see what I'm pouring in. Because I'm getting back exactly what I'm pouring in. And I see what the roadblock is and I remove it. Because life pays back in kind. And there's no way that we can get away from it. No way. You can't beat it. The two pillars in front of the Temple of Solomon, one represented the law and the other represented love. And they said it like this: on the one hand, all is law. And on the other hand, all is love, and love is the fulfillment of the law. Now, it's up to you and to me to see that we are equipped to do the thing we are attempting to do. This is our business. Now, if we're not equipped, let's get into something else, or let's get equipped in the thing we're in. This is our business, to know what we're doing And then it's up to us to do that. Because we want to. And the law pours back whatever we pour in. It's cold as electricity. This electricity here will make this tape, or we'll fry our eggs, or we'll fry our bottom. And it don't care at all. That's the nature of electricity. That's the way electricity does things. That's its nature. And so it is with this law of life. Whatever I pour in. Now let's just look at it from one angle only. And that's the self-thinking that we alcoholics get into. I don't think that it's because we chose it. Some of these days, before we get through this thing, I'll tell you what I think is the cause of the whole business. But now we're just looking at it. Because we're misfits, it forces us into self-thinking. And we end up with the tab of being the most selfish, egotistical, self-centered people on earth. Because we have been forced into self-thinking, trying to figure out why these things are happening to us, why we don't fit. And so we end up, eventually, with nobody in the circle but us. Pouring self into life, we've gotten back nothing but self, and there we are. All alone, and we hate our own guts, and we can't even live with ourselves. You see how it comes? Self-thinking poured in comes back, and eventually we've got nothing but our miserable self. Our own families have written us off. And it works in all fields the same way. Self-thinking is insanity. Self-thinking is insanity. And that's what we're looking at. Motivation, motivation. The law. Now, in the East they put it like this. They say that anything that is done as a means to an end is self-robbery. Because the means and the end are exactly the same, but for the passage of time. And so you're robbing yourself if you're doing something as a means to an end. They say anything that's worth doing is worth doing as an end in itself. Now, the simple explanation of that is this. If we're working 5 days for a paycheck so we can live 2, we have robbed ourselves of 5 days. We live 2 days out of 7, you see, because we're going to the salt mines for 5 days in order to get a paycheck so we can live 2. Now, to beat the rap, we get lost in today's doing. This is what I'm talking about, the motive for doing things. We get lost in today's action, in the doing of today's chore today. And you've worked 5 days, and you've got your paycheck, and you've lost nothing, you see? You've lived a whole time. Now, this is what we're looking at. Relating this particular phase of life, the business enterprise, into the total picture. The motivation and the action. So on the one hand, all is law. Now, every time I find myself uncomfortable, out again in left field. If it be a business situation that I'm battling. As soon as I get uncomfortable enough, I come to myself, just like I did on the way back to town. And I say, wait a minute, big boy. What is important? What is important? What are you doing here? What have you put in here that has gotten between you and your program and your God? And I see it. And I eliminate it. Now, it can be anything. It can be the profit motive. It can be the dollar sign. It can be me and my authority and the lack of respect for my dear employment. It can be anything. But I've got to eliminate it. I've got to get it out of the way in order to move comfortably again. Now, justice without judgment, the law. We get back exactly what we pour into the stream of life, except that it comes back in the nature of seed. If you plant a grain of corn, you get 500. But you don't get 500 grains of wheat. You get 500 grains of corn. Life pays back in kind. The law. And on the other hand, all is love, and love is the fulfillment of the law. And love must eventually become our only motivation. And the quicker you and I bring this about, the more joyous our living experience. Many people say to me, when are you going to retire? And I say, when I can no longer walk. Because my business is the most fascinating thing in the world. And my relationships with my people are just like this. Just exactly like this. It's just like making a call on an old friend. And there's nothing to outthink, outperform, outmaneuver, nothing to impress anybody with, nothing to do anything but just share our experience, strength, and hope one with another. In a business problem as well as in everything else. Now, this is something that every individual can prove to himself by the doing. Again, motivation and action. You can prove it without any question of a doubt. Now, there's a specific problem we want to look at a minute. One of our people all of a sudden finds himself making more money than he has for quite a while. And it's bothering him a little. He's wondering if he might be gouging his customers a little bit or something like that. Maybe charging too much for a service or something. I think, number one, we must come to see that every good and perfect gift is from his hand, including this substance picture. To get rid of the division in life and see that every good and perfect gift is from his hand. And then I think you and I have to develop a living pattern that plays it by ear. We have to play everything by ear. To go into a business situation with a preconceived is then my will. And there's no way for me to get guidance and direction. If I have things cut and dried and I'm going to maneuver the guy and trap him on the third turn to the left. You know? This is my will. You see? And there's no way in the world for me to get guidance because I've closed the door. I've got a roof over my head. Now, we're people who have said to ourselves that we can't run our own life. We have said to ourselves that we've turned the will and the life over the care of God, as we understand it. And we have said to ourselves, we seek through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with our own God, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry it out. Knowledge of His will for us, the power to carry it out. Now, don't you see that this has to then be a plant-by-ear deal? If I'm expecting guidance and direction, I've got to have the roof off. I must be free for guidance and direction. So I can't go with a preconceived plan. I can go to help somebody do something and play it by ear. And how much fun this is. How simple it is and how easy and how good it is. When you don't have to maneuver him, you know? And when you're not afraid of being maneuvered. People used to say to me all the time, Chuck, you can't live like that. You'll take advantage of it. And I say, how in the hell can anybody take advantage of me when I'm doing what I like to do? Because I want to. How is anybody going to take advantage of me? They can't. You see it? It's fabulous. This is a fabulous thing. So we play it by ear. Now, what then is our yardstick as to whether this is my will or God's will? And that's this crux of the problem. What then is the yardstick? Gentlemen, we have an interpreter with us. And it's right here. Right here. And this is where rigorous self-honesty enters our picture. There is a something here that knows. Now, orthodoxy calls it conscience. I call it God. God in me. And this thing knows, and you can't fool it. And my business then is performance according to pattern. Let's look a minute at what I just told you. 99% of my business is with that competitive bid. Now, where does this put me? It puts me in the position of spending my client's money. And I have to watch it like a hawk because I bill after the money's spent. And it's pretty hard to lose money when you get your costs all in before you even bill the guy. You know? But with this thing of being in position of spending my client's money, I have to be on top of that performance all the time because I have got to know within me that his money was spent wisely and well. And when I know that his money was spent wisely and well, I take him the bill and I am not afraid of nothing. And the guy says, that's too high. If he did, you know. And I say, you know what made it a little higher this time? You monkeys changed your mind 14 times. I had this fighting bill 3 times already. Now make up your own mind. And there's nothing to fear. There's nothing to fight about. There's nothing. The guy said, so we did. You know? And we laughed. The carpenter says, I came that you might have life and have it more abundantly, wave upon waves. Abundant life. I never had it so good. Now, where then is the yardstick? It's right here. It's right here. This is what I was working up to as the next moon. I cannot charge out of proportion to the job I have done for my people. And this is known to me. This is known to me. The monitor is right here. If we listen to this thing, we cannot then overcharge for our services. Taking advantage of a situation to better our own condition, we don't have to. The flow takes care of it. The flow takes care of it. And we have to make a just charge commensurate with the service performed. Now, there are certain loans that are much more difficult to arrange than others. There are many where you got a lot of work to do, you know. You got to know a lot of approaches in order to be able to bring this thing about. And that's one thing. And then there's another thing. The risk involved. The greater the risk, the higher the interest, and the greater the charge, you see? Because there's got to be compensations for the greater risk. Now, when we know what we're doing, we know these things. And when we're performing according to our own pattern, we know a commensurate charge. And it's only if we are going past what would be a normal charge for this kind of service that we need concern ourselves. It is not that we made last week $2,000. This isn't the thing that would make us feel badly. This should make us feel good. If we have performed accordingly. You see? Now, certainly, a good performance, and lots of it, should create a natural flow that would allow us to live in abundance. For instance, I've got an automobile right out there, John. I think it's the finest car made. It's rather expensive. And so I get a carload of Jewish gentlemen in it, not long ago. And we start to lunch. And when I'm saying, we can't deal with this monkey, look at the car he's driving. He's got a nickel. And I said, gentlemen, I've been in this business longer than I care to tell you. But it's well over a quarter of a century. And if I can't afford to ride in this car, you can't afford to do business with me. And we had a big laugh over it. But you see, again and again and again, and I think this thing can tie in so easily with maybe our previous business experience where there was the outthinking and outmaneuvering and outperforming. And where the more we could make, the smarter we thought we were. And there's a little guilt feeling that goes with it. But all in the world you need to do with it is to look at the service and see if it was a reasonable charge for the service performed. And your insides will tell you whether it was or not. You don't have to worry about this. There is no reason in the world that we should try to put a limit on something that's limitless. Now, the point would be this. When you and I come to see that there's no value outside of right here, that there's only evidence of value out here, that there is no value out here at all. $1 million that you put value on is a noose around your neck. If it's the evidence of value, it's the greatest thing in the world. But if we put a value on it, it's a noose. Because we got it some way and somebody can get it from us. You see? And we've got to protect it. God, we're in a mess already. Yet. You know? But if it's merely the evidence of $1 million state of being, it's the greatest thing in the world. Again, you see, the attitude and the effort. The individual adjustment to this new way of life. And it is, again, in this area, as limitless as in all others. Do you see that now? Huh? Does this settle it? Because if it don't, we ought to stay on it. But it should be, this should be an answered question. And I see the answer, and if you don't, we ought to move it again. All right. Now, what is it, 12:30, 12:20? We got to quit this one, too. And I'll wrap it up with this. You see, the two pillars, the law, and let us not deceive ourselves. If we don't like what's coming into our lives, let us then change what we're pouring in. Because that's the only way to change. If we change it, because we are the people who are sowing the seed. And if our harvest isn't right, let's change what we're planting. That's number one. And number two, and this is the greatest of them all, love is the fulfillment of the law. Now, I told you this morning, I never knew anything about love until I learned it from a bunch of drunks. And it converted my thinking from God to his kids. And in the very action of trying to share my experience, strength, and hope, first with the drunk, and then with everybody, I come to love all of God's kids. Now, I love the whole human race, all of them. And of all peoples, I love the drunk the most. And let's see what this does for a man in his livingness. I love you. It's none of my business what you think of me. I don't care. I don't have to care. It never occurs to me. Why? Because I love you. Period. Now, if you happen to love me back, it's a plus. So you can add to my life, but you cannot take away. And this goes with every person that lives. You can add to my life, but you can't take away, because I am not concerned. I was at Chino Monday night. A couple of guys went over the fence. Monday night, while I was there yet. And there's a guy that was chairman of the panel that night who included another guy. I don't mind telling you who it was. Most of you know the guy, and as much as it was done, I don't think he'd care. But this guy was Jack Prose. Jack is as tall as a mountain, you know, and as hard as a rock. And Jack has never liked me. It has been a little worse than that. And so here we are at Chino together. And he talked first, and then I talked. And then we went for coffee. And we got a cup of coffee, and I looked across the table, and I said, Jack, I've never known you very well, because you wouldn't let me. And he says, I know, Chuck. He says, it's just been the last 3 years when I could stand your name. He says, I hated your guts. And I said, well, Jack, I think as we walk down this road, each in our own way, if we do these things, our roads tend to converge. And these things tend to pass away. He says, I think you're right. He says, are you around your office much at noontime? And I says, quite often, Jack. He says, I'm down your area every once in a while. How about me calling you and we'll have lunch? Now, I've known this condition for years. But it didn't bother me. He said to me after Johnny Carroll's funeral, I ran on to him a little while later. I'd given John Carroll's funeral deal. For those of you who don't know, Johnny was in our central office for years. And so Jack came up to me and he says, Chuck, he says, you gave a mighty fine talk at John's funeral. Well, I says, I'm glad. And he says, I sure was surprised. And I said, why, Jack? Well, he says, never expected. I thought you'd be throwing a lot of that goddamn religion of yours in. And I said, Jack, did you ever hear me throw in some religion is what I'm talking about? And then I just walked off. But you see, I love the guy. I love the guy. I have nothing against him. He's entitled to his own opinion. And here he's the last holdout of the bunch. And he's going to have lunch with you. Now, this is what we're talking about. Love is the fulfillment of the law. It's my business what I think of you, and it's none of my business what you think of me, unless you want to make it so. You can add to my life, but you can't take away. Now, this carries right through this business picture just the same. If you don't love your people, gentlemen, you're robbing yourself. If you're not going to help them do things they need to have done, because you want to, and the remuneration is incidental, it just comes with the picture. You see? But you do it because you want to, because you love your people, and you're trying to help them do things that they need to have done. Then you're robbing yourself. But if you can't, just get lost in today's action because you want to. Helping people with their problems, business-wise, because you want to. You'll find that this thing is just as fabulous in its impact on your livingness as is the fact that today you don't have to drink. It's the same thing. It's not different. It's the same thing. Let's make it all inclusive. And let's have lunch.